After we have zeroed in the target with conventional rounds, we'll fire our three modified projectiles, which will be adjusted to exactly the same weight, of course. This way of doing it has three advantages over my original plan. First, it is surer. There is much less chance of something going wrong. Second, we will be delivering approximately 10 times as much contaminant, and the bursting charges in the projectiles will disperse it better than anything we could hope for with a loaded walking cane. And third, it need not be a suicide mission. We can keep the hot projectiles shielded until the moment they are to be fired, so the mortar crew will not be exposed to a lethal dose of radiation. My big worry was whether we would be able to get our projectiles inside the power station instead of just on the roof. The building is so heavily constructed that I doubt they would penetrate, even with delayed action fuses. Ed Sanders convinced me, though, that once a 4.2-incher is zeroed in and firmly seated, it will deliver rounds with sufficient accuracy and a low enough trajectory so that we will have an excellent hit probability on the side of the generator building facing the shore, which is practically one huge window, 10 stories high and more than 200 yards wide. Armed with this new plan, I went to talk to Harrison, our Florida chemist. I explained to him that his part of the job is to procure a suitable radioactive material and then, using his special facilities, safely load it into the mortar projectiles I will bring him. Harrison had a fit. He complained that he had only offered to supply the organization with small quantities of radionuclides and other hard-to-obtain materials. He did not want to become involved in actually handling any ordnance, and he especially objected to the quantity of material required by our plan. Not many people in the country have access to so much radioactive material, and he is afraid it will be traced to him. I tried reasoning with him. I explained that if we tried to load the projectiles ourselves without the shielded handling facilities he has, one or more of our people will surely be exposed to a lethal dose of radiation. And I told him that he is free to choose a radionuclide or a mixture of radionuclides, which will cast the least suspicion on him, so long as it is suitable for our purpose. But he flatly refused. "It's out of the question," he said. "It would jeopardize my entire career." "Dr. Harrison," I replied, "I'm afraid you don't understand the situation. We are at war. The future of our race depends upon the outcome of this war. As a member of the organization, you are obliged to put your responsibility to our common effort ahead of all personal considerations. You are subject to the organization's discipline." Harrison turned white and began stammering, but I continued relentlessly. "If you continue to refuse my request, I am prepared to kill you on the spot." As a matter of fact, I was unarmed because I had flown down on a commercial airliner. But Harrison didn't know that. He swallowed a couple of times, found his voice, and said he will do what he can. We went over our figures and our requirements again and settled on an approximate timetable. Before I left, I assured Harrison that if he feels this operation will place him in too much jeopardy to continue as a legal, we can bring him underground after it is completed. He is obviously still very nervous and unhappy, but I don't think he will try to betray us. The organization has established a very high degree of credibility for its threats. Just to be on the safe side, however, we will use another courier when the time comes to drive the modified projectiles down to Florida to be loaded and brought back. No technical knowledge is required for that. I don't like to act like a tough guy and threaten people. That is an unnatural role for me. But I have very little sympathy for people like Harrison, and I am sure that if he had not agreed to cooperate, I would have leaped on him and strangled him with my bare hands. I guess there are a lot of other people who think they are playing it smart by looking out for themselves and letting us take all the risks and do all the dirty work. They figure that they will reap the benefits with us if we win, and they won't lose anything if we lose. That's the way it has been in most other wars and revolutions. But I don't believe it will work out that way this time. Our attitude is that those whose only concern is to enjoy life in these times of trial for our race do not deserve life. Let them die. In the conduct of this war, we certainly will not concern ourselves with looking out for their welfare. More and more, it will be a case of either being for us all the way or against us. The next diary entry is dated April 25th. Off to New York tomorrow for at least a week. Several things cooking up there which require my attention. The business down in Florida should have been taken care of by the time I return, and if so, it'll be another trip to Chicago for me, this time by car. The Yids are really screaming about the attack on their embassy. They are giving far more emphasis in the news media to this attack than they did to either the attack on the Capitol or the bombing of the FBI building. Each day on TV it gets worse, with more and more of the old gas chamber propaganda that has worked so well for them in the past. They are really pulling their hair and rending their garments. Oy vey, how we are suffering, how we are persecuted, why did you let it happen to us? Weren't 6 million enough? What an act of outraged innocence. They are so good at it that they almost have me weeping along with them. But, strangely, there has not been another mention of the murder of those 9 tourists by the Israeli guard. Ah, well, they were only Gentiles. One unexpected benefit to us from the embassy action has been a major quarrel between the blacks and their Jewish patrons. Purely by coincidence, the attack came 3 days before the date which had been set for a nationwide strike for equality, another of those giant media affairs to be stage-managed by the Human Relations Councils, in which spontaneous demonstrations were to be held simultaneously in a number of large cities, with black and white citizens joining together in a call for the government to break down the last of the barriers between the races and assure the blacks of full equality. But then, last Thursday, the day after we hit the Israelis, the big boys in the councils, Jews of course, called it all off. They decided that they can't afford to share the media spotlight with the blacks until they have finished milking their own martyrdom in the embassy raid for all it is worth.